Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 155, How to Run a Convention Game. That's right, episode 155. So for all of you who are new and longtime listeners alike, I want to welcome you to the show and remind you about perhaps the most important thing, because as you might know, a lot of stuff gets covered on these episodes, and it's hard to remember them. You know, maybe you're on your way to work, you're at the gym, you're painting models. I don't know about you, but I couldn't pay attention to all that and everything on an episode of a podcast. But we try to make it easy for you here at Wargaming Recon. You just need to remember the link to the show notes. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR155. wargamingrecon.com/WR155. Now, today's episode has a very special guest. He's coming back for his second appearance on the show, and I'm really looking forward to it because he's someone who's run a lot of games at conventions, a lot of games at game days, and just has a ton of experience doing this. So I know I'm bound to learn something new, and I hope you are too. So I would like to welcome the one and only Mr. Mike Payne. Mike, how are you today?
I'm good, Jonathan. Good to be back. It was fun last time.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of incredible response to you being on last time. People were just so excited, and I've only had that happen one other time that was larger than that, but the outpouring was amazing. People were just so excited to hear what you had to say and to know that you were on the show and just kind of learn more about pulp wargaming and how you got into the pulp side of things and just more about you, I think, because people have seen you at a lot of these different game shows and conventions and that sort of stuff, but people, even if they play in your games, they may not really know as much about you as you were able to share last time on the show. And I know that as someone who has played in your games numerous times, I'm particularly excited to learn what goes into your whole process and everything for when you prepare a game for a convention. Cause it's a lot of work, right? I've run games a few times at TotalCon, and just the work that's gone into those on my end, and I have a minimal amount that I have to do because I've worked with a team with Adrian and I've worked with Court, and like we each have our own aspect of stuff that we deal with, but you basically do all the prep and everything yourself. So as a one man operation, I think you have a lot to share with all of us and a lot that we can learn from.
Well, I'm not sure how much I can teach anybody about preparing for a game, but it's a little different for me than it is for most people because I have a big collection, and that's why some of my preparation for my big game is not as bad as, let's say, somebody that decided, oh, let's do Iwo Jima, and then you're starting from scratch if you don't have the troops and the terrain and all that stuff, and especially if you're going to try and do it by yourself. Pretty sure you're not going to get that done too quick and have a quality game out there. Although you might, you know, it depends on how much time you get to spend on it. But, you know, I started out with, a piece of fabric and a couple of hills from my old Gettysburg game that Kenny Roberts and I used to run. And maybe I should talk about the preparation for that. And I did a sand pebbles game. And I liked, I think I mentioned this last time we talked, I liked what I was doing and it kind of evolved into the pulp stuff that I do. And, you know, I try to add something every time I run a game, and now I don't have to add as much. Matter of fact, I'm trying to not add things. I got so much. So in the sense of the stuff I need to prepare for the game, my biggest preparation is getting it out of this house and getting it into my truck and setting it up on the table. That's the battle for me. Whereas, quite a few years ago now, one of the first convention games that I ever ran, my buddy Kenny Roberts and I came up with this Gettysburg game, And I still think it's one of the best games we ever put out. I'd like to do it again sometime. And it took us 2 years to get that on the table. You know, yeah, because we were making our own rules. We didn't have any of the figures. We didn't have any terrain. We started from scratch, and we wanted to do a big production, and it took a long time. So it depends on what you want to do. If you have the stuff already, you really only need to come up with a good scenario idea and decide what you're going to use for the rules. But once I get everything figured out in my head as far as what I'm going to do for a scenario, like this coming Havoc this, what, next week?
Yeah.
Next Friday? I'm playing on Friday, which I haven't done that in years, but Vic Gregor is running a Burma game that I really want to play. So I'm going to show up on Friday and play for a change. And then I'm running two games on Saturday because it's going to take me all morning to set up. So I'm missing that session. That's my setup session. And that, you know, and that's part of my preparation. I need almost a whole session to set mine up. You know, most people don't get into, you know, the big circus I get into. And you can set yourself up, you know, fairly, you know, most people hopefully only need like an hour. But I need a lot more than that. Plus, I like to talk, and somebody always comes over with a question. So that doesn't exactly hurry up the setup either, especially when I get going.
You talk? I would never imagine that.
Yeah, yes, you would.
Well, why don't we – let's go back to the very beginning. When you – like, where do you begin? Do you say, hey, I want to run something at Havoc? But let me create something, or do you have an idea in mind and then later on make the decision that you want to run it at a convention or a game day? Like, how do you begin your process?
It's a little bit of both. I always, you know, I have this, I call it the my war game circuit, the conventions that I plan on going to. And then, whenever I decide that the season is starting, it changes from time to time, depending on whether I want to keep running the game for the next con or not. So, I'm always going to probably be running Hang High, at least for now. But, you know, every year I run it, you know, like we discussed before, I don't want it to be the same. So I at least need to change the description of the game and the name of the title of the game and to some degree. So that's usually where I start. You know, what do I want to do this time that's going to be different? What did I learn from running it all year? What did I not like? What did I like? You know, what do I want to keep? What do I want to dump? And then I'll try to come up with a decent blurb. And I usually like to make it sound like a trailer from an old, like when I used to go to the movies when I was a kid. You see trailers now, but in the old days, or even older than I am, you know, they'd have if you go on YouTube and you look at old trailers, you kind of get the idea of what I'm talking about. And I'll pluck out some of the words that they use to describe the adventure that they're trying to get you to go to the movies for. And it gives me a few ideas for my blurb. And so then I throw that all together. And once I got the blurb done, I have to think about, well, do I need anything for this? You know, this particular idea, you know, like Dr. John Dunn gave me the Nolan Brothers idea. He sent me a couple of miniatures that he painted. He gave me a nice little die-cast Cadillac to go along with them. And I had to put them into the game. So that I like to have them in the game all the time. They're a lot of fun. So, you know, people add things. You know, and it kind of helps me prepare for the game too. You know, stuff that I didn't even expect. And then once I got that description figured out, you know, maybe I want to do something historical. So like I'm doing it at Havoc this year, I wanted to do something World War II because I got the Japanese. Of course, they're not ready. So as soon as we hang up, I'm probably going to start painting so I can get it with something done. I still got a little time, so I should be able to get something on the table. So that idea was, I'm starting to read about, the invasion of Shanghai, when the Japanese started the war with China, really pre-World War II. Some people consider it the beginning of World War II. So we're going to do the invasion of Shanghai, and, you know, I really just need to come up with an idea. Actually, I'm still thinking about how I'm going to do that. I have a pretty good idea. It really depends on how many Japanese I get done, I guess. But I have some pretty good ideas about how I want to do that. And then I have this other game that's an idea I got from something I read on some website about the Shanghai Municipal Police. And they would take the Green Gang gangsters from the courthouse to prison, and the Green Gang would break them out. So I've been running that for a little while because it's really not that hard for me to run. I'd like to have some nicer armored cars. I'm just using vehicles that I have in my collection right now. But I think I'm going to upgrade some of that stuff at some point and make it a little more, give it a little better look than I have right now. And I think those are the three games I'm running at Havoc, and I'm running them at Huzzah too. But I think I'm repeating a couple of them. Probably going to run. Oh, and plus, Adam is going to run a game on my table, a Frostgrave game, which will be interesting because I haven't played that yet, and I think I'm going to play it. I am going to play it, so I'll play. And if he needs any assistance with anybody, I'll try to help him out, even though I don't know the rules that well. And I'll learn a new set of rules, and I'll kind of get a break from running my game. I'll get a four-hour session where Adam's going to take charge. So I'm looking forward to doing that, too.
It kind of sounds like you have a general idea of where you want to run something, and that you then have you know the story or the outline of the story that you're kind of trying to tell, because each game seems like they not only do they live in a specific world, but you have it, I would say, fairly well created, and you have a vision of it in your head. So you know that you want to look at this certain area and tell the story of these characters or this situation or this place. And then you use the game as a way to do that, so that once you know what the story is, or at least the outline of it, one of the things I've always picked up on with your games is the event listings. And it's funny how you made reference to the old movie trailers, because when I read your event descriptions, I've always gotten a feeling of like I'm reading a movie, and that's how your games for me kind of play. I know like some rule systems, people say, well, that's like, you know, a movie version of whatever, like Bolt Action. People say that's like the movie version of World War II. It may not be completely historically accurate, but it's fun. There's lots of explosions. Things blow up. People get shot. You have heroes and cool things happen, and that's that. Like, people have a good time. People like that kind of stuff. And I get that same feel when I read your event descriptions. So I've been able to tell that you put a lot of thought into them, and that might be an area that people who are just kind of looking into running their own events, it might be hard for them to figure out how to start and where to start. When I've run events, I've had it a little bit easier. I'm not someone who has, you know, a large collection of anything really, but I've been able to team up with people who do have stuff. So it makes it a little bit easier. We've known that, say, like, we want to run a game at TotalCon, and we may not know what we want to run. We just know we want to do something there. And then we're like, so what do we do? And, you know, you kind of scratch heads and look back and forth. Well, so who's going to volunteer to do what, and how are we going to do? And then inevitably it turns out to, well, so-and-so has a large collection of stuff. What do you have? How much time do we have between whenever we're having the discussion and when the event is, so that way we can know, like, do we have enough time to add extra stuff in? Should we just do something that everything's already made, basically? Don't have to worry about terrain. Don't have to worry about painting models and that kind of stuff. And so, like, we've used that kind of process. But for me, I think it's really interesting to see that it feels like you do place that emphasis on story first, and that you're then able to take that story, and even if it's not the first time, you're able to then take that and then see how it played out last time. And I like how your games are kind of like a living game, whereas you buy a set of rules, right, at the store. I don't care what they are, but Saga, you buy Saga, you buy Bolt Action, Flames of War, you buy Warhammer, whatever it is, Black Powder. They are what they are. The companies might release FAQs or errata later on, but the rules are what they are. You play it a million times, and it's going to be the same, more or less. But your games, they're always morphing into something new. So how does that actually play into your your method of prepping, because I'm like, in the past, I know you said you don't have your rules written down and like you might change them during the course of a game, but you generally know how you're going to go about to run the game and what your internal rules are. But how do you add in all those adjustments that you want to make from before? Because presumably, do you know in advance that you want to add those in before you get to the convention, or do you wait until you actually show up and you see who's playing and how the game's going and then decide if you want to make adjustments at that time?
It's a little bit of both. You know, it's like I mentioned before, it's an art form. And what you just described, what you do with the gang there, is very similar to what I do. You know, you have, you know, you want to run a game. So, what you know, I'm kind of locked into what I want to run for a game as far as it's going to be somewhere in China or Southeast Asia or maybe Polynesia or Philippines or something. But that's kind of the part of the world that I'm going to run a game in. If I do something somewhere else, then I probably am going to need a partner because I'm not going to do a whole full-blown game by myself at this point. But, you know, going back to Gettysburg, for instance, there's really it's kind of – a lot of it's already decided for you because, you know, all the history's there, you know, how many troops were there. And one of the main reasons why I got interested in that project is because my buddy Kenny is a Civil War fanatic, and I like the Civil War, but I have, you know, but I like that time period especially. But I thought maybe he and I could do a project together if I did something that he was interested in, and he was. So we did the Battle of Gettysburg, and one of my problems with historical battles is some people, it's almost like a reenactment. Not that that's a terrible thing. I played those games, and they're fun. But I kind of like the idea of there's enough going on in your game that you're not necessarily going to have a historical outcome. I don't want to manipulate it in such a way that things really change quite a bit. But we allowed Stuart's cavalry to show up at the Battle of Gettysburg like after everybody else was on the battlefield. You know, then they were allowed to show up, which of course they didn't. You know, most of the guys that are in the Civil War already know that. And the sweet thing about that game was, and I'm really not sure how we pulled this off, the game always ended in a four-hour session. One time it went 15 minutes over. I don't know how we did that, but that was really convenient. And the other nice part about it was we made the rules simple enough that after turn two or three, we could go get a hot dog if we wanted to. Because the game was running itself, and that was great. And everybody seemed to be having fun, and it was never the Union wins the Battle of Gettysburg every time. Probably 50-50. I never did keep track of what the outcomes were. And I'd like to get that back on the table again. But, you know, like I said before, I'm kind of committed to what I'm doing. If Kenny wants to get back into it, or my friend Doug Need had mentioned that he might want to get involved. Maybe we'll do that again sometime. But as far as prepping for a game for me is, I kind of already have a pretty good idea what I want to do, so I only have to make a few changes. Whereas if you want to come into to do a game, everybody's got their own way of doing it too. You know, I mean, depends on what you're putting on the table. But I would think that generally you just need to have an idea of what you want to do and then get all the stuff together. And then, you know, nice to have a set of rules, or if you're going to write your own, there's some serious preparation there in some ways. Of course, if you're going to do it my way, at least you don't have to write anything down. But there's a lot of things to remember too. And that can be kind of a struggle for me sometimes, memory wise. But I just like to do it that way. It's just more fun for me.
I know exactly what you mean when it comes to historicals. I think a lot of people refer to them as button counters, the people who look to make sure you have the right number of buttons or the right color facings on the uniforms and that sort of stuff. I don't get any fun playing with those kind of people. It's just, that's not how I play.
In the hobby, you know, and, you know, God bless them. If they're having a good time, you know, I mean, we're not all on the same page in this hobby. I think that's a good thing, so. You know, if that's what you like to do, you know, people like that stuff. So why shouldn't they? you know, you and I, we like something a little different. So, you know, we kind of shy away from that, but that's okay. You know, that's what's so great about this hobby. It's, man, what a canvas. I mean, there's just really nothing you can't do. I mean, I really believe that any idea anybody comes up with, we can figure out a way to make it work. Take Leo Glantz's baseball game. I had this idea that, I was going to take the Avalon Hill board game and make a miniatures game out of it. So he and I are talking on the phone, and he says, yeah, how are you going to do that? So I meant, you know, we can move guys around on a battlefield. We should be able to do it on a baseball field, you know? And, next thing I know, next time he calls me, he's really thinking about it now. He wants my Avalon Hill board game, and he's looking up all kinds of statistics and stuff. And then he starts talking about making a Fenway Park, and this went on for a long time. And you've seen the results, and I played it a couple of times, and it plays. You're playing baseball. It's pretty cool. And who would have thought that was going to happen from some idea that I probably was never even going to act on? And he took it way beyond what I was thinking of doing. He's more of a baseball aficionado than I am anyway. So I'm glad that he took it on rather than me. I never would have done as good a job as he did.
It's a beautiful table. And I tell you, you look at it, and I swear I'm looking at, like, someone took a gun that miniaturized Fenway and put it on the table, because it's gorgeous.
Yeah, he obsessed over that for a while. Matter of fact, he did some sections of that he put a lot of time into, and then thought about it. He goes, I can do that better. And he ripped it down and did it again. I mean, and he's not even as proud of the visual effect that you get from that game as he is from the way the game plays, and rightfully so. It's you're playing baseball. It's pretty cool.
I've never had the pleasure to play in his game, but one of these days I hope to be able to, because it looks so cool seeing it set up and seeing people have fun playing it. And you can tell he's put a lot of time and effort into it. I bet he's put even more time and effort than people would even realize.
Oh yeah, you could. I hours on the phone. He and I talked about this. Hours. We couldn't even. You wouldn't even believe how much talk went back and forth. No, don't do it that way. I want to do it. We went on and on with this. You know, because I really felt like I was involved in the project, even though I never laid a finger on it. But I was his sounding board for him. You know, he made all the final decisions. He listened to some of the things that I was throwing out there, and some of the things that just wasn't the way he wanted to do it. He had his idea and his mission pretty much laid out. He just wanted to bounce his ideas off me, and I think he did a terrific job. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure there's a war game of recon up there on the Green Monster, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right. I spotted it once, and I don't remember if it was me or someone else took a photo of it, because I happened to see it floating around online, and I was very pleasantly surprised to see it. I felt honored, actually. I was like, wait a sec, how and why is that there? Because I was confused. I didn't know if it was like a prank or someone photoshopped, and I'm thinking, who's going to spend the time to do that for the show?
Well, he's a fan. He's a fan, you know?
I appreciate it. I really do, because I tell you, and maybe people think I'm just being fake modest, or I don't know, but I really don't think anything of what I do here. Like, I have fun and I love connecting with people, but at the end of the day, I just think, you know, I'm just some guy who's talking into a microphone and people happen to listen. And so I don't think much of, you know, what I'm doing here, except like I'm happy that people like what I'm doing, but I don't think, oh, look how many people are listening. People must really like this, a following. I just think, oh, I got to do another one. I got to go, you know, sit in front of the microphone for an hour is what it is. Let me come up with something fun to share in the hopes that someone somewhere will listen to it. And then I see something like that, and it blows me away. It really does.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I enjoy the most about this show, and there are a lot of things I enjoy about the show, but I feel like even though the thing that's really nice is you don't have to be there at a certain time to listen to the show. The show's there. You can go back and listen to an old one. But I always get this feeling that the gaming community is listening to this the same time I'm listening to it, or they're listening to the same thing I'm listening to whenever they listen to it. So you're kind of like bringing us all together, you know, all of us hobbyists, all of us people who are really interested in this particular subject and it's just a nice way to make contact with people like that I don't even know. You know, it's pretty cool.
One of the things I try to do is there's a lot of shows out there about tabletop gaming, board games, video games, war games, but most of them, from what I've seen, they either focus on one specific set of rules, or they do kind of like a news type show where every episode they're focused on a different rule set. So, you know, this week they're talking about Flames of War. Next week they're talking about Black Powder. The week after they're talking about Saga. Then they're covering Bolt Action and so forth. And like, I feel that it's always whatever's the new hottest game is what's getting the attention. So if you're playing or interested in that new hottest game, that's great. But at the same time, if you're not, then you might not be as excited about the episode. And then I feel like that content has a certain shelf life so that, you know, 5 years from now, 1 year from now, maybe 10 or whatever, are people still going to want to go back and listen to that episode you did about whatever rule set? Cause are people even still playing it anymore? I try to, you know, take a step back and not focus on any one specific thing. And I've been criticized for that. You know, if I said this is going to be the Bolt Action podcast and I really got heavily into Bolt Action and did rules analysis and, what's better to take and points this and that and army list generation and all that kind of stuff, I could get, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people listening and all sorts. I could probably be sponsored by Bolt Action or whatever, but that's not what I want. I want it to be that like 10 years from now, someone can tune in and hear an episode I did years ago and think, oh wow, this is interesting. Like it's that it's going to stand the test of time. I like that evergreen content that, you know, no matter what rule system you want to play or what the game is, people are going to be interested to hear what you've done, Mike, to prep your games and get ready to run a game at a convention, because they can take that and they can use that information and advice to give them a leg up for when they want to run something at a convention. And it's not going to be specific. Say, well, it only works if I play Hail Caesar. It only works if I do pulp games. It only works if I do Frostgrave. Whatever. It's going to work generally no matter what you want to do. And I think then you're able to broaden that base and reach more people to make it more accessible to everyone. And, I just like the idea of people feeling that they're excluded because they're not what you're focusing on at that one time. I actually recently learned this interesting term. I've never heard of before. It's from reenacting, which is probably why I've never heard of it, but I'm going to reappropriate it and use it for wargaming. It's called FARB, F-A-R-B. Are you familiar with it, Mike?
I don't think I am. Go on with that and I'll tell you.
Okay. So FARB is a derogatory term, and I'm actually getting the definition right now from Wikipedia, but it was shared with me by someone who was a reenactor and is an authority on wargaming. But FARB is a derogatory term used in the hobby of historical reenacting in reference to participants who are perceived to exhibit indifference to historical authenticity, either from a material cultural standpoint or in action. And so I would say that I'm kind of a FARB when it comes to historical wargaming.
I'm proud to say I'm a FARB.
And not that I want to get it wrong, but for me, the emphasis for me is about having fun and building relationships with the other people
right.
at the table. Do I think if I'm doing a Civil War, if I'm playing in Gettysburg, I want the Union to be wearing some sort of blue. You put them in pink, you put them in a gray or a butternut, I'm going to get confused. I'm not going to look and say, well, you know, that shade was really only late 1864, so it shouldn't be used here because then they changed me. I'm not going to do that, partly because I'm not going to know, but even if I did know, I'm not going to point out that there's not the right number of buttons or that this unit had a different standard at that time. Or for me, that's not the important thing, but for someone else, it is. And if that's what they're getting enjoyment from, I'm all in favor of them having that happiness from it, as long as it's not detracting from the pleasure that other people are getting at the table. So FARB, new term to me. I'm sure some other listeners are familiar with it, and maybe some of them have been called it, or some of them have called other people it. I don't know, but I think I'm going to have to proudly refer to myself as a FARB from now on.
Yeah, I might even change it from pulp gaming to FARB gaming.
supposedly...
You pretty much said what my thinking is on that. It's, you know, if somebody wants to count buttons, you know, that's just their thing. That's the way they want to do it. And that's okay. As long as you're not screwing my fun up. I don't expect everybody that comes to my game to enjoy it. And I don't feel it's my responsibility to make you enjoy it. You know, that's up to you. You either enjoy it or you don't. You know, you have your own judgment. You're going to judge things. I can't do anything about the way you judge. And why would I even want to bother? So, you know, some people like it and some people don't. We're not all the same. And that's great. You know, I mean, just, you know, find the things that you like. It's here somewhere. I think everybody could find a little niche in this hobby that they enjoy, even if it's just the simplest thing, playing on a little 2x2 with 4 or 5 figures and a couple of dice. You know, it doesn't have to be a big giant production like I put out there. And you know, I'm sometimes I feel like I'm killing myself to do it, but I love doing it. But you know, that would be kind of monumental to a lot of people, and I understand that. I mean, you don't have to have everything, as long as you got an idea that is worth putting out there on the table and having some fun with. And I think, you know, most of us feel that way. We wouldn't even be in the hobby anyway.
I'm going to be doing something that I think is going to horrify a lot of people. I've been wanting to play Hail Caesar for a long, long time. And I've talked in a few episodes about going to the Hobby Bunker and buying 1/72 scale plastics, getting some Hat Industry stuff, some Caesar Miniatures stuff. And I've also said a lot on the show that I'm not someone who paints. It's just I may want to, but I never do. And so the stuff, it sits there. I buy these things, and they sit there. And I buy more things, and they sit there. And then I buy more things, right, because all the other piles isn't enough by any sense of my just craziness. So then I buy more. And they sit there. So I decided enough's enough. It's been years and years since I picked up the Hail Caesar rulebook and said that I want to play. So I need to find a way for me to actually play. So what I'm doing is, and I've talked about this with my buddy Adrian, who you know and who some other listeners might know. He's been on the show before. He actually did the 2015 Huzzah episode with me. But he and I have been saying, no, you know, we're going to play Hail Caesar because we love Black Powder. It's the Hail Caesar is the ancient rule set that the folks who did Black Powder, they did this. And so we're like, we want to play it. But it's like, it's years, and we have a hard time getting together. He just works like crazy, and I got a wife and a baby, so I don't have a life anymore. But I came across something that I said, this is going to make it happen. So I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but there's this...
Oh, Adrian?
No. But there's this game designer, Sam Mustafa. He has a whole set of historical games. He's done Maurice and LaSalle and Longstreet, and he has a new one out on Ancient Rome called Aurelian. Now, he's written columns in Wargame Soldiers and Strategy and other wargaming magazines where he's discussed about the fact that in his gaming group, he's the only one who still paints miniatures, and he's like flabbergasted that people don't paint minis for miniatures wargaming. That they'll just put out an unpainted plastic or metal figure, and like he just gets confused by it. And that's if they even put something out. So when he made this game, he wanted it to be a game where you could play with miniatures, or you didn't have to. So what he's done is he's created these beautiful, he calls them unit tiles, but basically they're a deck of poker cards that it's like poker card stock. On the front side is this really beautiful color photograph of a unit, and it has, you know, all the information on it applicable to his game. And on the back, it says like a real, you know, whatever. So I bought an entire army. It was like $20 on drivethroughcards.com. I'll have a link in the show notes in case people are interested. But he has 4 armies right now. There's ancient Romans. I think there's Carthaginians and there's some others. And I said, you know what? I bet I could buy this whole set of this army basically of ancient Romans and then use them to play Hail Caesar. Because in Hail Caesar, like some historical games are very specific on what your base width is for your unit, for your brigade or whatever it is. And it has to match and all this. Hail Caesar is very forgiving. It's like one of your games where things are a little more lax, a little more open. It's just, you work it out with your opponent ahead of time. So I said to Adrian, what if we get some of this stuff? The Romans are $20. They got, you know, some other armies that are a little cheaper, $18 for Germans and so forth. I'll buy a deck, you buy a deck, but we play using the Hail Caesar rules. So my deck came, they're gorgeous cards. In one of these days, we're going to get around, we'll play Hail Caesar, we'll have cool 3D terrain and all that kind of stuff on the table. but instead of moving around ranks of miniatures, we'll push around our poker cards. That
have. Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I have Dave Chang from the Schenectady War Gamers Group, the ones who run the Conflict of Five Nations.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me a whole bunch of decks. I haven't really taken the time to look at them, but I think they're the same or similar to what you're talking about. And I love that idea. That's a cool idea. You know, as a matter of fact, and I played Hail Caesar a couple of times at the at Adler Hobby when I helped him play test for the game they ran at Hazard last year. And there was a lot of fun. Gordon put on a nice event. And I think that's a lot of fun, that particular rule set. And that's a really cool idea. I'm in.
It might not look like much on the table. And, it's not something I would do if I was running it at a convention. If I'm at a con and I'm saying I'm going to run a Hail Caesar event, and then I show up and all the units are cards, no matter how beautiful the cards are, I would expect some people to be like, you're joking, right?
Who cares what they think? If you just mention it in the description, you know, put it in caps if you have to, you know, even, you know, we can make up a little poster with a couple of cards on it, like I like to put on the Barbarians once in a while, and do it. Why not? It'll be fun. You know, people will sign up. It'll be a good time. It's a great idea.
You know, for personal games, I think it can be fantastic. It means we don't have to paint anything. We don't have to assemble anything.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with doing something like that at a con. People put board games out at cons. You know, it's the same thing.
I'm not really sure how this is going to play out in things.
Well, fiddle around with it. You know, you and Adrian are seasoned war gamers. You guys can figure out a way to make it be a good game.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, one of the cool things I like is all the cards are the same size, a uniform. So, like, you get your standard base width, and you do that, and you know what the things are. It's just having to make the cards fit into the appropriate categories from Hail Caesar. Because obviously these are made for a different game, and so the units on them aren't going to necessarily match what the units are for Hail Caesar. But
I'm sure you can make kind of adjustment. You know, I mean, whatever you want to do is, once you have a scenario decided, say you wanted to do the Battle of Elysium or something like that. So you have your battlefield all set up, and then you just work out, whether you can actually use the Hail Caesar rules right out of the book. And if it doesn't seem like it's going to work in that particular situation, then you make the adjustments to make it work. You know, you play a few games, and, you know, at the end of every game that you play, there's always that little chat about this was good and that wasn't so great. And sooner or later, you get not perfection. I don't think you ever get that. But, you know, you get something that's fun and people enjoy, you know. I would say go for that.
Well, I tell you, I was just amazed when I saw the price, because it's $20 for the army. The army's 50 units. You get everything from cohorts of, you know, Roman legionaries to cavalry. You get archers and stuff like that, auxiliary. The only thing you don't get, there's no, like, unit card for, like, a general, which, as you know, like, in Hail Caesar and Black Powder, your general is separate, but it can be attached. So, like, that's something that would have to be worked out. And there's no artillery. So if you wanted to do a siege of a town or something, you got to generate something out. So, but otherwise, I mean, for most things, it just, I don't know, it looks really good. And the cards are gorgeous.
That would be an easy solved problem, the generals and all that stuff. I saw a YouTube, and I'm sure we could dig it up, where a guy was showing how to make your own playing cards. And so now you find an image of Caesar or whoever you want, you know, or Hannibal or somebody, and you make your own card. You know, that wouldn't be that hard. You know, all you need is a printer and a computer, and you already got that.
That's
paper.
It's a pretty good idea, actually.
A great idea.
I'm going to have to jot that
idea
down.
I
can't take credit for your idea.
Well, not exactly. Some guy made the cards and it was his idea. I just remembered it, which is a feat in itself for me. I like that idea. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I'd play.
It's kind of funny. Here we are talking about your process for what you do when you set up games to run at a convention, and you're doing it right now. You're helping me to come up with ideas for, you're using your process. It's live for everyone to hear. You're not just talking about it, you're doing it. That's awesome.
Well, that really is the process, just talking about the hobby. You know, I love these conversations. you know, you're going to have a hard time getting me off the phone probably because I could just go forever.
See, I love that. Some of my, I love everyone who I have on the show because if I didn't, I wouldn't invite them on the show. That's just how I don't talk about anything that I don't like. I don't have people on that I don't like. It's just, it's how I operate. There's so much unpleasantness in the world. I don't want to put it on the show. But what I really love is when I have someone who I really like who comes on the show and they just go. I don't have to, you know, prompt them for things. They just, I just say, hey, let's start talking. And then next thing I know, the hour is up and I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, but it's time to wrap up the show. And that was fantastic. Because people hear me all the time, right? But they only get to hear you when you're on the show is how I think of it. So I love when a guest can come on and they can just, they just go and they run with it. And people get to enjoy that, I think, anyway. Yeah, I hope they do.
Well, you know, they either do or they don't. As long as we're having fun, who cares? You know, I like talking about this stuff and you like talking about it. So that's what makes it fun for me. Actually, I have a little story that when you mentioned preparation, I popped into my head, and I want to tell it before I forget.
Yeah.
I was at a Council of Five Nations convention. I was going to run Hang High. I forget what the title was. I don't know, maybe Zombie Revenge on the Road to Hang High or something like that. Those are the kind of titles I like to give them. And, you know, steal some movie title and throw Hang High in there. But anyway, so I'm setting the game up. And all of a sudden, I have this big box of figures, you know, like all my basic stuff, my French and my Germans and the Russians and a lot of Chinese and all that stuff. I forgot it. I forgot my massive collection of figures. I'm like, what? Well, now what am I going to do? You know, I'm all messed up. I'm panicking almost, which is pretty rare for me. I don't go into a panic too often. And Dave Chen comes walking into the room. And I says, Dave, I forgot my miniatures. And he looks me right in the eye and says, well, you're a seasoned GM. You'll figure out something. And I thought about that for a second. I'm like, yeah, you know what? He's right. And I did have, fortunately, I mean, if I had to, I was going to go grab some figures from someone I knew. But I had the box of figures with most of my main characters. Not everybody, but enough, you know? So I just winged it, and nobody knew. They didn't know I didn't have all my stuff. I didn't tell them. You know, I just ran the game basically the way I had planned, with less figures and a little more artifacts and event cards, and I kind of just got everybody off on the right foot, and they just played and had fun and shot each other and did whatever they do, you know? So I thought that was a good preparation story that I would throw out there if anybody takes anything from that. I mean, you know, you've been in the hobby an hour, let's say, but you got an idea for a game and you messed up somehow. Don't worry about it. You'll figure out something. You know, it's just a game. And I'm glad Dave came up and said that, because I don't know where I would have went from there. That's all I needed, you know. My fellow gamer gave me a dope slap, and I was okay.
I think you're right, though. The important thing is, after you figure it out, don't tell people what the error was or you forgot this or the mistake, because like you said, no one's going to know. So if you mess up a rule when you're running the game, for example, which has happened to me, because it's just, I don't remember the rules particularly. Like, I need to have the sheet in front of me. I don't remember, like, I need to roll this in order to hit or to wound or whatever. So if you mess up, be consistent about it.
That's the important thing. You just it doesn't really matter what the rule is, as long as everybody is playing the same rule.
You can always tell them after if you want to and say, oh, do you know what? Turns out I messed that up. If you ever played anywhere else, you know, this is the correct way to do it. I'm sorry for the mistake, but like, this is how we did for the game. It just, that's happened to be how it was. Cause I've seen some GMs be like, oh, you know, you're right. I should have done that. And then they will like fix it going forward, or they retroactively fix it. And like, the GM's running the game, it's their game. So I go along with stuff, but I'm not sure necessarily if that's the best way to handle it, because, you know, it kind of causes potential issues with how, like, they didn't do it before. So what impact did that have on other people? Like, if they didn't give someone a chance to do something because they forgot, but then they let the other team do it later on, does that mess things up potentially for the first team? And again, for me, it's not about whether you won or you lost, it's about whether you have a good time. So I think it just kind of depends on how someone handles it. is
right. I like to think that you try to be as fair as you can. I mean, you know, it's things aren't necessarily fair anyway. It's not fair that somebody rolls bad every time they roll. You know, it's not their fault. It's not the dice fault. It's just what happens. You know, but if you're using a rule wrong, I really don't like the idea necessarily. I guess you could do it, you know, if everybody's in agreement to it, you know, it hasn't changed anything. But, you know, in general, I would rather just keep using that rule wrong than just now let's do it this way, you know. Although I've probably done it from both sides too. You know, it's a judgment. You have to make a judgment. That's what you do. You know, that's why you're the GM. You know, you're the guy who makes the decisions on how things go in the game. And someone's got to make them, and you're the referee.
You mentioned earlier. Absolutely, because, I mean, your name's the one listed in the event listing as the person running the game. And so ultimately, the buck stops there.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and you're not going to make everybody happy either. I've had people walk away and think they got screwed, and maybe they did, you know, but. You know, you make the decisions you make and you live with them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then you move on. You know, you can reflect on it later and you can think, well, geez, maybe I could have done that like this or like that. But I mean, that's over. You know, it's just more experience in your GM toolbox to think about later when you're running a game. Mark McLaughlin, the game designer the other day, he and I were playtesting with, Bill Greenwald. For Havoc. Bill's got a neat game that he's running kind of off the, memoir style, layout, but it's the French Impressions in like the late 1800s. I can't even think of the name of the war right now. But anyway, Mark tells this story about he used to, play Dungeons and Dragons at this guy's store, and the guy had all these books and all this stuff, and, you know, he'd look things up and he'd have you roll dice and all that. And then he was helping him move, and he opened up one of the books, and they were blank. The guy was just running the whole thing out of his head. He didn't have any books, you know? And, you know, everybody was having fun. They kept coming back, so I think that's cool. I should have let you interview Mark and have him tell you that story. Actually, you should ask him if you ever get to talk to him, because he tells it a lot better than I do.
You mentioned earlier that for Huzzah, you're kind of co-running a game with Adam Carrier. He's doing Frostgrave. How does that work when you're trying to, set up and get everything together to run a game at a convention when you're doing it with someone else? Did he approach you? Did you approach him? And, like, how do you guys coordinate and, interweave the whole, creation?
Well, I did mention. Matter of fact, I'll mention it to anyone out there listening that, my game is available for a session at a con if I have it set up, especially at Huzzah, I have it set up every day. And if somebody wants to take a session on that gives me a rest and gives them a chance to not have to, you know, all that preparation we were talking about, you don't have to do that. I got my table set up. You want to make a few changes? Go ahead, you know, bring a piece of terrain, whatever you want to do. Bring figures, use my figures. It's just, you know, I got the stuff and I want to have it set up all the time, but I don't mind sharing it with somebody who wants to try something. So Adam said, well, maybe I'll try that sometime, you know? And then recently he decided that he would. He asked me if he could have, I think he wanted the Saturday morning session. I think he's running it. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I wasn't really locked into anything yet. And so that means Saturday morning, there's no stress for me. You know, just come down to the table and help him out if he needs it. And I think I'll play, because I haven't played Frostgrave, and I've been meaning to do it for a while, and see how it goes. So that's really all the preparation. I mean, I don't know what Adam's doing for his preparation. I know he paints tons of stuff. I mean, every time I turn around, he's posting something new on Barbarians that he's painted. He's got an enormous collection, I assume. I don't know how many he needs for this. But, you know, plus he's welcome to use any of my stuff anyway. And we'll see how it goes. I know nothing about Frostgrave, hardly, except that I've seen, you know, Adam has posted, you know, he's got a nice blog that he puts a lot of stuff that he posts from games that he's played. And the game looks like it's kind of fun. know, plus he plays a lot of other stuff too. That guy plays all kinds of games.
I feel like every other day there's either a post about a whole unit that he's painted or he's played like five games since the last time he, I don't know how he does, cause he works full time. He's engaged. And I mean, all this, planning a wedding and I don't know how he does it because.
I don't know. He's a producer. That's for sure. I mean, there's always something coming out of him. So I was pleasantly surprised when he asked me to pick a session because like, I've been wanting people to do that. You know, not that I don't like running my game because of course I do, but if I'm going to have it set up that much, I like to share it too and see what other people's ideas are. Maybe I'll get a few ideas from maybe I'll even, I doubt that I would run Frostgrave myself, but whether I do or don't have fun playing it, which I can't see myself not having fun, I wouldn't care if somebody else or Adam decided he wanted to do it again. You know, I mean, it's available. If I'm there and you want to give it a try, I've got this friend Roland Paperman. He started out playing the Hang High stuff back when he was just a young kid. And he's played it so many times that every once in a while he'll offer to run it. You know, he's kind of like played it so much, he's done, more or less, you know. And he's GM'd some stuff. And I let him GM my game. Sometimes they call, hey, you mind if I ride this session? So I'm like, yeah, okay, go ahead. So I'll play. And the thing that's really funny and I really enjoy is he's played it so much that he really runs it generally in the style that I run it in, but how he wants to do it. And which isn't, you know, a hell of a lot different from what I do, but it is though, because, you know, he'll make different judgments on, you know, why you can't do things. And as a matter of fact, I remember this particular moment where I was making a comment and he turned to me and he says, I'm the GM, not you. And, that gave me a chuckle and that was cool too, because he was the GM. So it was up to him to decide what he was going to do. So I let him, you know, I left him alone. Go ahead, make it your call, you know? So he's come a long way. His parents are war gamers from way back too. I mean, his mom and his dad, they're both war gamers. And, he's got, all kinds of wargaming experience. So who knows what he's going to be doing someday.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's fun. I like when people want to try and do a little something different with my game. It just makes it more worthwhile for me to even have it up there when something new is going to happen that I really don't expect, you know.
Well, I hope people have been able to get a glimpse at how you get going to run your games at conventions, and I mean, I learned something new too from you. So I figured I would. You always say, "Oh, I don't have anything new to say," and then inevitably, there's that pearl of wisdom that I find you end up sharing, whether it's on the show or whether when we're talking, you know, outside of an episode or whatever. So I'm pretty excited about that. At this point, I have another segment that I like to do, the mailbag section of the show, where I get to share listener feedback. And this one's a little bit different. I had mentioned it to you actually before the show, because usually on Facebook, I just kind of share information and I'm like, hey, here's a new episode of the show or whatever. But I came across this, and I don't even remember how I did, but I came across this photo of this guy, and he's in, I don't know if they're like boxer shorts or gym shorts or what they are, but he's in gym shorts playing, I think, Xbox, and he's sitting on the floor and he has this baby in his lap kind of, and he's using his chin to keep the bottle in the baby's mouth because the baby's obviously hungry. And so, of course, something I have some sort of affinity to. And I was like, this is just, it's funny. And I was curious what people's reaction would be to it. So I put it up on the Facebook page, and I think all I said was, caption this. So some listeners had commented, and listener Carrie said his caption is, it's ABBA, select start. How many times do I have to tell you? Listener Peter said, this new Formula One racing game sure is kick ass. And listener Irene said, multitasking, you got this. So, Mike, what would your caption be for that photo of the guy with the kid?
Share gaming with your kids.
Have you ever done what the guy the photo's doing? Because I have not, but it makes me laugh.
I can't say I have. I may have stopped what I was doing to go change a diaper, maybe, but no. No, I'm not too big on the video games anyway. Probably I'm afraid that if I get hooked to one of those, I won't do what I should be doing.
Someone told me they did something similar.
I thought the photo was kind of funny. I got a kick out of it myself.
What I can't figure out is if it's staged and why they would stage it, or if like some mom's walking by and sees her husband or boyfriend or whoever the guy is with the baby. He's like, what the heck are you doing? They just like took a photo to be like, that's just crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it might be a little bit of both, you know. Mom saw dad getting away with multitasking, I guess you would say, on that one.
I can't tell if it's, you know, like a fail where just put the game down and take care of the kid, or if this is considered something successful. I'm in between on it. I don't know whether I would do it or not. I've been known to, I don't know what I've been known to. I haven't done that is what it is.
Yeah. I can't see myself even trying to do that, you know, although I could see myself at the, you know, if I had one that small and I wanted to play a board game, you know, or let's say even just the chess, I could see maybe trying to pull that one off. Give it a try.
Yeah, you might be able to.
Yeah, I think I could definitely pull that off, I think. I'd rather play without, you know, I'd rather have the baby sleeping somewhere so I could play. But, you know, I mean, if you can fit a game in and keep the baby happy at the same time, more power to you.
Yeah, it's not easy. Not easy at all.
No, you're finding that out every day, aren't you?
I am, but do you know what? It's worth every moment. It really is. I think the episode before this, where I share like 5 tips for wargaming parents. Like one of the things in the episode, you wouldn't think you'd have to say it, but in the moment, you might be torn. But one of the things I say is, you know, like the kid has to come first. If they need to change their diaper, you need to drop them off at sports or whatever, you put the game down and you go take care of that. In the moment, if you get a friend calling you saying, hey, do you want to come out and play, you know, Hail Caesar tonight? You might be like, I really want to play Hail Caesar because I haven't played in like 4 months. And you might feel torn, but like, come on now. It seems like common sense, and it is, but sometimes common sense not always so common, right?
Well yeah, unfortunately. You know, another caption could have been, gaming comes first. I don't think we wanted to go there.
No, that's not as pleasant, is it?
Yeah, because it does. You know, it doesn't come for us.
And that's when you get yourself into some trouble.
Absolutely. You know,
I have a few announcements for people. There's a new one actually, which you're aware of, Mike, because you've been so kind as to help me out with this. But I have tons and tons of business cards, and it's a chance for listeners to help grow the community. I realized that the business cards that I had were ones with incorrect information on it. They actually had my old email address, which I'm retiring/have retired, depending on when people listen to it. So I ordered new ones. It was an amazing deal, but in order to get the deal and everything and to get them at that really great price, I had to buy 500 of the darn things. I'm not going to go through 500 cards in my lifetime. I'm not, right? I mean,
you might. You'd be surprised.
I not on my own, which is where everyone comes in.
Yeah, so, well, you got to pass them around. That's what they're for.
Yeah, so I'm asking listeners, if you're interested in having some Wargaming Recon business cards because you like the show and you want to tell friends about it, when you're at a con, your game day, a club night or whatever, and someone's saying, hey, you know, I really wish I could learn more about whatever, or I'd like to listen to something, and you don't mind just handing out and spreading the word, I will mail you business cards for free. All you need to do is email me, jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. I'm going to need your mailing address. I'm going to send them to you. You tell me how many you want. If you don't say, I'm going to send you a dozen, just because that's where it ends up getting more expensive on the shipping side of things to send stuff. But I'll send you a dozen. If I see you in person and you want some, I will give you however many you want in person. when I go to things, like I'm going to be going to Havoc, right? I'm going to have a bunch on me. I'm probably not going to hand out that many, but maybe I'll see some of you there and some of you might want and you don't mind handing out. So I have boxes of these things. They're here piled up. And they're gorgeous cards. They really are. I got them made online. They're nice. The name of the show, the website and all that kind of stuff. It gives my email address, the correct one this time, the phone number for the show and that kind of stuff. So people are so inclined. And Mike, I know you've been so generous to take a batch from me. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, you should leave a couple at the table at Havoc. You know, where everybody puts their little flyers out.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, people will pick them up. And they did come out nice. Those are nice.
Yeah, thank you. I can't really claim any credit except I had the logo made. I think the logo is gorgeous. The one downside of the logo is because it uses so many colors.
I remember when you were working on that. It came out good.
It's impractical for me to get t-shirts made in bulk. Because like screen printing is just, I don't want to tell you how much I'd have to charge. So I got to buy them one at a time, the t-shirts online, which makes them pretty expensive, for me to do, which is why I haven't done t-shirts, offer t-shirts in general to people. The only way you can get t-shirts right now is either be a guest on the show and then you get a special black t-shirt, which I think I sent you, Mike. And if not, I owe you a t-shirt. And if you want just a regular white. Oh, you got it. Awesome.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I'll be wearing that at Havoc.
Oh, me too.
Yeah,
we'll be like twins.
We'll be recon buddies.
Yeah. And then listeners can get a nice white t-shirt. It's a beautiful, great 100% cotton. But you have to back the show on Patreon. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But speaking of other events, I know Havoc is coming up, but I want to let everyone know that Huzzah, which is happening in May, you can register now for events, and I suggest you do because a lot of events are selling out. They're getting booked. So I'm all excited because I got into the two events that I wanted to do. Huzzah is interesting for me because I do a live recording there of the show. The people from Huzzah, they sponsor the show. There you are. It's a match made in heaven because they're just incredible. But what makes it interesting is it's always around the time of my wedding anniversary. So We go up for our wedding anniversary. The first year we went up, it was like our 1 year anniversary. I think it was actual to the day of the 1 year anniversary. My wife was like, okay, we'll go and whatever. So what we do is we kind of split our time in half where we take, say, like most of Saturday and, you know, part of Sunday. And like, that's our time to do whatever as a family. And then the rest of the time I get to play games and cover stuff and so forth. So like, I'm going to be playing, at the Gates of Prague, which is the Fast Freddy rule set that's being done by Chris Parker. He's from Day of Battle. And then I'm also in your Battle of Henkai game with all those Japanese. So I'm excited for that too. But then the rest of the time, we'll go into Portland and do all sorts of stuff. And then I got my own show I got to do, which I presume I don't have to sign up to say that I'm going to be in attendance for that because I'm running it. But anyway, you want to get in because stuff is going fast. And I think the hotel space is either sold out or there might be one or two rooms left. There's not much available there. But if you go to wargamingrecon.com/Huzzah register, there'll be a link in the show notes. But that'll take you to the registration page so you can see all the events and pick what you want to play and then get signed up. And really don't wait, people, because every day Dean Emerson from MHWA is posting on their Facebook page saying, and here are more games that have been booked. Like, I think 2 days ago, he had like three or four, and then later that day, it was like five or six, and now it's a long list. A lot of really good games. You'll get into something that'll be good. But if there's something special.
Well, everything there is going to be good, but if there's something you really want to play, you better get going, because you'll miss out.
Yeah, just don't wait. And to remind everyone, Huzzah's May 13th through the 16th, 2016. I am going to be doing a live recording. It'll be that Sunday morning. I should be in the event listing now because I think Andre had put me in. So if you want to come and listen in, I will be talking about my experience at the convention and that kind of stuff. And hopefully I'll be having a guest. I'm not quite sure, but try to work that stuff out. But that is part of my process for running an event. And then I just want to remind everyone about Patreon, because in addition to the sponsor, which is one way that helps to fund the show, because I tell you, I was surprised when I discovered it, but it's expensive to do a podcast. It's really expensive. And even when you do it on the cheap, I try to do it on the cheap, it's still expensive. So between the sponsor, but also the great people who support Wargaming Recon through Patreon, they're the ones who make it possible for me to keep on doing this, because otherwise, like, the money wouldn't be there to be able to go to places like Havoc, to go to Huzzah, to record and all this kind of stuff. So I want to thank Dave and the Wargames at Battleshades Facebook group, Patrick and Chris Parker, for their very kind support. They are just wonderful people, and they've been backing me for a long time, so I am very appreciative. Everyone who backs Wargaming Recon on Patreon gets a few things, no matter what level you back at. You will always get episodes before everyone else. Patreon backers, just, they get them usually the day before, but sometimes a couple days before. And then you also get behind-the-scenes content. It could be videos that I do. It could be audio that we cut out. Maybe we have a conversation with a guest before or after something funny happens that gets in, or a blog post, or whatever. I give you, every single episode has behind-the-scenes content that I then share with you. And then you can also back at different levels and get cool rewards. And this is where that t-shirt comes in that I had mentioned. So there's rewards that go from as little as $1 per month, and that gets you, the behind-the-scenes access and the content before everyone else. But then you can also do the next level up. It's $5 a month. You get a bumper sticker. It has that cool logo on it. You can put it on your car. You can put it on your minis case. You can put it on a binder, whatever you like. $7 or more a month, you get thanked by name in every single episode. So that's how the people who I thanked, Chris and Dave and Patrick, they got thanked, because they picked this level or a higher level, because I bundled this in too with some other stuff. If you pick the $9 per month level, I send you a postcard. I personalize it on the back. I actually just sent out some postcards. I love the postcards, Mike, because I'm able to just kind of, share stuff that I wouldn't necessarily share on the show. And I get to talk about cool things that are coming up. And I don't know about you, but the only mail I get nowadays are bills or junk mail, right? And it's kind of, it's crappy, right? Remember the days when you would get letters in the mail and you'd look forward to getting something from a pen pal or a buddy or a family member and just hearing what's going on? Nobody does that anymore.
My mother still does.
Does she? It's a lost art, but it's wonderful. And so
I call her and then she writes me a letter.
She writes you the letter. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to revive it with the postcards. I'm going to lose. But it's
postcards are cool.
It's so fun. They get the logo on the front and I write a message on it, and it's different. Every month is different. It's different for every person they go to. No two are the same. I've sent them, these I send all over the world, wherever you are. So you get the postcard, you get thanked by name and behind the scenes and all that stuff. And then there's two more levels. The next one up, and I'll actually have some of these with me at Havoc, so people can see in person if they want. But they were giving Recon measuring tapes. They have the logo on them, they get the web address on it, and they're great. Whether you're playing a miniatures game or whatever, you just measure your distance. You can use it for line of sight. They fit in. They're small enough you can shove them in your pocket without having a big bulge. You're never going to have to forget them. Throw them in your bag with your gaming stuff. It's just, they're great. So $15 per month, you get measuring tape. And I think they're great. No one's picked it yet as a reward, but I think people will be happy when they do. And then if you want that t-shirt, $22 a month covers the t-shirt. I send you one t-shirt. All the other rewards, you get them every month. This is a one-time only thing. And you get the t-shirt sent to you, and $22 covers the cost of the t-shirt. It covers the shipping, all that stuff. So it comes to your door. And people like the t-shirts. I've gotten a lot of compliments on the t-shirts from just all sorts of people. And so all I need, if you pick that, is you're going to have to let me know your t-shirt size. And then Patreon also needs to know your shipping address. But $22 actually isn't too bad when you consider everything. So that's all the stuff from Patreon. And like I said, you can get in.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're really comfortable. They're nice and soft. I wash everything before I wear it. But even if you didn't, it's really nice and soft. And the white goes with all sorts of stuff. And I think the logo's not obnoxious. Like, I don't know about you, but you ever go to, say, a convention or a game store and they have a t-shirt made up for their stuff or a club or whatever, and you look at it and you think, oh, that's just something I would never wear. And I'm not going to name any place, because I've seen someone.
Well, you don't have. Everybody's seen that from time to time.
Not because it's my show, but I think this is a t-shirt that, like, you can wear out and about, and no one's going to be like, what are you wearing, you moron? Like, I think it's okay.
I'm, I'm looking forward to somebody taking a picture of me sitting behind Skull Island with it on.
Oh, yeah, they got to do that.
Yeah, that'll be a nice one to add. Maybe that'll end up being my profile picture. We'll see.
Ooh, that would be exciting. I can add that, too. I have a little collage of all the guests who have photos of them wearing the t-shirt, and I would have to add that into the little collage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's Patreon.
I might add it my own.
Fantastic. And for anyone who's interested, what else is coming up? We got our episode guide. I'll have a link in the show notes. And the next episode that comes out is going to be the one where I talk about Havoc. So you'll be able to get that on April 11th, 2016. And Havoc is next weekend from when you and I are talking, Mike. So I'm looking forward to it.
Hope everyone goes because it's going to be fun. I'm going to have a good time. I know that.
Yeah, I'll be there the Saturday afternoon. I'm not sure how early I'll be getting there, but I'll be there for the afternoon, walk around, do some shopping, and see some people and that kind of stuff.
I should be set up by then.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. I never really get to play in anything just because I know I don't have much time. So I never sign up, to come as an attendee. I always get that visitor badge. But if anyone from Havoc is listening and they want to comp me an attendee badge, I'm sure I could find the time to play in something and add that into what I talk about. Havoc, it's a really good con. It's small, but I think that's part of the charm for it. And I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff there. It's nice to see.
Yeah, it's a good con. I always have a good time there. Actually, if you got time for one more short story that just popped into my mind.
Absolutely.
The Dave Award, the award they give away for the best game at Havoc.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to meet Dave a few times. And, this popped into my head when you were talking about your card game. He said, it doesn't matter whether you just paint the armies red or blue, as long as you're playing a game and having fun. I want to pass that along because Dave was a seasoned war gamer and a real good guy. And if he says it doesn't matter, then it doesn't matter.
I think that is just some really good advice for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've got to paint all my stuff, but it doesn't mean you have to, you know?
Well, Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show again. I was really looking forward to it, and it's so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, we've only done this a couple of times, but I've talked to you quite a few times over the years, and it's always fun.
I'm going to have to find another reason, I think, to have you on again. I don't know what it'll be, but I'll come up with something, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll get together. Maybe there'll be some event that we have a good time at, and we can chat about it afterward.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I want to remind everyone, the show notes can be found at wargamingrecon.com/WR155. Like I said, we talked about a lot of stuff here, and no one's going to remember it all, which is why it's in the show notes, so you can get that there. And I'm sure everyone wants to just join me once again in thanking you, Mike, for coming on the show. I want to remind everyone that no matter how busy you are, no matter how much planning you need to do to get that game from concept to convention, you always know that you have to, you gotta, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Are you a wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer? Then you need to tune into the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016, at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.